And the first speaker is John Manchin. He is president of the Space Power Association, which is one of the groups in our alliance. He's also president of a profit-making corporation, the Artemis Innovation Management Solutions, which is a management consulting firm which is focused on dealing with difficult innovative problems. He has a 25-year career at NASA. At one point, he led an $800 million R&D program. He's internationally recognized as a leader in space systems, innovation, and R&D program management. For many years while he was at NASA, he was in charge of the NASA Space Base Solar Power Studies and is widely acknowledged throughout the world as the leading expert, world's leading expert, on space solar power. And so we are enormously honored to have him today. John?
Good morning. Because this is a press event, I'd like to just qualify a little bit, although I very much appreciate the field promotion that George offered me a few minutes ago. I am not actually a PhD, so it's a Mr. John Manchin rather than Dr. John Manchin, but I do appreciate the thought. So what I'd like to offer you in exactly 20 minutes or less, maybe a little bit less, is some background on the topic of space solar power, where it came from, where it's been recently, and where we hope it is going in the future. In particular, this storyline sort of starts out by speaking to the question of what are the challenges that we face. A number of those were mentioned by Mark a few moments ago, but they essentially revolve around the continuous growth in the human population, currently at 6 billion or so, on its way to 8 or 9 billion or so later in this century. And the idea that at the same time that the population of the world is growing, the urgency to improve the quality of life for those billions of people is increasing. And so when you combine those two factors, the growth in the population, the increase in the economies in the developing world, and the ongoing, more modest growth in the OECD countries, Organization of Economic, etc., what you see is a tremendous growth in power generation, in the demand for fuels, in the demand for all sorts of products and commodities which are the direct result of affordable and abundant energy. This is depicted in these first two slides, the first two quadrants here in this slide. But of course, there are increasing concerns that the resources that we have available to us as human society are ultimately going to be finite in terms of the resources that we're using now and that we have used historically. Everyone, I think, is familiar with the Hubbard curve. It was published in the Science magazine a few years ago and in Scientific American. Came from a gentleman in the 1950s. His theory was that oil fields are finite. They increase and then they decrease, and they do so approximately on a Gaussian curve. When you add up all the wells in a big oil field, all of those individual Gaussians make one big Gaussian. When you add up all the oil fields and all the oil wells in a given country, it does the same thing approximately. And it's just a very simple statistical theory of what happens to a depletable resource given access and given demand. And so that curve is sort of represented here. Now, there's a lot of debate about this and when it'll happen, and it was talked about in the 70s, and every time there's a little hiccup in supplies and prices spike, people talk about it. I guess the real point here is that oil is not about to run out. Oil is going to go on for the indefinite future. What is happening, though, is that oil supplies are falling behind oil demand. And in general, energy supplies are falling behind energy demand with this constantly increasing growth in the need for energy. And that leads to increased prices and leads to increased demands for alternatives. The lower left just speaks to another point, an issue that we face, which is the growing consensus that there are, in fact, things going on with climate change, which are driven by human activities, in particular the emission of what are called greenhouse gases. Again, this is very controversial in some quarters. 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't really talk about it without being a fairly strong counter-argument. These days, there's a strong agreement among scientists, at least, that something is really going on. If you wanted to do something about greenhouse gases during this century, at the same time that you were dealing with the growth in human population and the growth in demand for energy to feed the growing economies of the world, you end up with a huge problem of carbon neutral or green energy sources. If you wanted to restrain carbon or CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere to only 4 times pre-industrial levels, then by the end of this century, you need 16 terawatts of carbon neutral energy. So that's equivalent to the world's entire consumption of energy today by the year 2100. If you wanted to restrain restrain CO2 concentrations to 2 times pre-industrial levels in the atmosphere, then it's on the order of 40 terawatts. So 2 or 3 times the current amount of energy that's used today. And this is with the two factors. One, you want to do something about greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere. And two, you have to take into account the growing population and the growing demand for energy to feed the growing economies of the world. And so that's a tremendous challenge if we're going to make progress in that area. And of course, worldwide, there is an ongoing challenge for both the developing countries and the developed countries to remain technologically competitive. And so this is an issue which faces everyone, and it's one in which if you don't do ambitious things, you are unlikely to retain the bleeding edge of science and technology, both in your educational systems, in your government agencies, and in your industrial base. And so that's a challenge that needs to be faced. Next, please. So 10 years ago, oil, when we did the last time, we did the big study on NASA on space solar power, what was called then space solar power. It was the Fresh Look study and follow-on programs. Price of oil was about $13 a barrel. You could make all the money in the world out of the dot-com bubble, which was getting started. The idea that you were going to invest money or that the government should take some action on completely new kinds of energy were just kind of, you know, fringy. Tiny little amounts, like less than 100 megawatts a year, were sold, ground solar. In the last decade, all of that has changed. So it's very, very well understood now. There are issues with the energy. There are issues with global competition for raw materials and resources. And there's all of the things I mentioned a moment ago. And there's a finite number of options, things that we might do as human society in order to address these challenges. Ground-based solar, other kinds of renewables such as wind, continue to develop and manage well our hydro resources, try to do things with new nuclear fission, safe and effectively, try to do things with carbon sequestration. But the bottom line is, ultimately, you need tens of terawatts. As much energy as the world uses today, you need again. And then you need it again over the course of the coming century. And you don't have the oil, the coal, or even the nuclear fuels to make that true. And so there's an enormous challenge. And the argument that is being put forward today is that it appears very, very plausible that space solar power is one of the largest options, as Mark mentioned earlier, to meet that demand. Next, please. So space solar power was invented in the late 1960s. The first patent was issued in 1973 to a gentleman, a Czech-American named Peter Glaser, worked for Arthur D. Little and Company. Peter Glaser and his original illustration from his patent is shown there in the upper right-hand corner. The idea was very exciting at the time and led to a round of industry and government studies in the 1970s, which essentially determined, as far as they were concerned at the time, that the technical barriers were surmountable, that there was no fundamental challenge in science, such as there is in nuclear fusion, to making space solar power work. It's solar arrays in space. You convert the solar energy into voltage, use the voltage to drive beamers, transmitters of some sort, either radio frequency transmitters or optical transmitters, lasers. You beam the energy down at relatively low intensity to receivers on the ground, and you have power 24/7. Unfortunately, with the systems concepts of the 1970s, the economics of the concept did not work. You had to put into place huge amounts of infrastructure in order to get to a case that closed. Hundreds of billions of dollars, up to $300 to $1 trillion in the concept from the 1970s in order to get to your first kilowatt hour. And that was just an insurmountable thing to think about. And even today, it would just be stupendously difficult. Next, please. Around 1980, the work on space solar power stopped in the U.S., continued internationally. In the mid-1990s, NASA kicked off a round of studies and what led to research and technology The Fresh Look study, the Space Solar Power Exploratory Research and Technology Program, fundamental idea was that since these concepts were invented, late 1960s, early 1970s, a lot had changed. Fundamentally, the electronics and the computing revolution, the revolution in software, the ability to construct things using robotic systems rather than having to build huge cities in space, all of these transformations in the technological base should make possible completely new concepts for space solar power systems. And this, in fact, was the outcome of our work in the late 1990s. That new system concepts were, in fact, feasible, but we weren't quite there yet. And there was an issue with policy in terms of, and whose job is it? And so along about 2001, 2002, the work, although successful, and by the way, highly regarded by the National Research Council at the time, sort of stopped again. Next, please. These innovations, however, have continued, and the progress has continued. Just to give you one anecdote, in the 1995 time frame, we're talking about where will solar cells be? Well, they were at about 10% efficiency in the late 1970s. By the late 1990s, they were at about 15% efficiency or so, and we were talking about, what about 20%? Could we get to 20% or 25%? And the consensus among our experts, a little bit conservative, was that that was a 20-year goal. Getting to 20 or 25% conversion efficiency on a high-efficiency cell. And if you read the literature, you know that last winter, the Spectralab announced a 40.7% efficient multi-band gap cell. And that was only 10 years after the forecast was that a 20 or 25% cell was a 20-year stretch goal. So this is just an indication of how rapidly many of the component technologies, you see it in all the electronics, all the consumer electronics, you see it in robotics, you see it in what can be done with software systems and with network systems and so on. This has all made progress so dramatically, so rapidly, that the systems concepts of the 1970s have been completely transformed into new models of how space solar power could be pursued, and which will be illustrated in a few minutes, I think, coming up. Next, please. In the package, and I think this is going to be available for you, there's just a highlight of some of the specific areas of technology where enormous progress has been made, and it comes down to in solar power, in materials, in lightweight materials, in robotics, in robotic assembly, just all of these areas which have been transformed since space solar power was invented as a concept. Next, please. So the other thing which has happened, of course, is since the 1970s, at the time, the vision was to provide power for the U.S. largely only and to the U.S. power grid. And there's really a much broader market set that's possible today. A lot of innovation in terms of looking at international markets for energy, looking for diversified markets, ones where you might provide power at mid-afternoon on the east coast of a continent, and in the late afternoon there, or late evening there, where they no longer need the power, move that power to late afternoon in another city, i.e. do power load following. Lots of innovative ideas. In addition, a new idea which has emerged is the possibility to use energy from space to make fuels. That's one of our principal challenges these days. And there are lots of very promising chemical processing techniques which only need energy in order to take raw feedstocks such as biomass materials or methane and transform those into the fuels, the high energy density fuels that we need to drive our mobile society. And that's a complete transformation from where we were in thinking about space solar power markets back in the 1970s. Next, please. There remain technology challenges that you couldn't go out and buy. If somebody tries to sell you stock in a space solar power company today and say, we're going to start building immediately, you should probably call your broker, not take that at face value. There's a lot of challenges. These things need to be overcome. Things like low-cost access to space, intelligent modular systems, further advances in robotics and assembly and so on. The nice thing is these problems don't require any new science and technology. They require new engineering, they require new research and development, new demonstrations. All of them appear to be tractable, and solving these problems will lead to tremendous new advances in technology for terrestrial applications, for other space applications, for use in exploration, and in transformational new capabilities in space, i.e. this is the kind of problem that John F. Kennedy was talking about in the early 1960s when he said, speaking of the just-announced Apollo program, we do these things not because they are easy, but because they are hard. and because it'll mobilize the best of our energies. And this is certainly true in the space solar power case. It's a hard problem, but a tractable one, and solving it will be of tremendous value. So in closing, I would just stop here with a notional roadmap. Everybody, I'd like to just tickle you with one thought, and that is that this is not a 50-year solution. People talk about space solar power satellites. It's, the joke is made about the fusion program somewhat unfairly is it's the energy of technology of the future, and it always will be. The same thing has been said in the past about space solar power. Great idea. 50 years from now, we could actually do something. And I would like to leave you with the thought that that's not true anymore. That with some of these new concepts, the kinds of things you're going to hear about today, the kinds of things that are possible today, that a truly transformational demonstration at a large scale is achievable within this decade. And it is not something that is 50 years away. And so with that, I will stop. Thank you very much.